him, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up there, the laws to abide, and that the land that I live in has God on its side.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is George Lakoff, a professor of cognitive science and linguistics at the University of California at Berkeley. He's the author of Don't Think of an Elephant, and his latest book is The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-written with Elizabeth Verling. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Lakoff.
Always a pleasure to be talking to you.
And on this patriotic day, the 4th of July, where people are gorging themselves with hamburgers and chips and baked beans, and there's patriotic flags and bunting and all kinds of fireworks going off around the country, and John Philip Sousa and all of that stuff, we are living in a very patriotic country. But surely there's a distinction between the kind of jingoistic patriotism that seems to get most of the attention, and a quieter form of patriotism, somewhat akin to what some of the founding fathers clearly had and wrote about back in the days of the American Revolution.
Well, you know, I think the most interesting answer to the question of what is patriotism came from Barack Obama in 2008 during the election period, when he was asked that question on CNN. And his response was that patriotism begins with citizens caring about each other. And he has said that actually a lot. He has pointed out that democracy is based on empathy, on citizens caring about each other and taking the responsibility to act on that care and to do the best they can in doing it, and they act through their government. What they do is have a government that does public provision for other people as well as themselves. The government, not just from the beginning, the government made roads and bridges, the government set up public education, set up the courts, set up a national bank, set up a patent office, and so on. And the government today has, a matter of public health, research, all sorts of public institutions that are necessary, absolutely necessary for living civilized lives and for starting businesses and so on. You can't run a business without public provisions by the government, and you can't live a reasonable life without it. And that's what Obama talked about from the beginning as patriotism, as the real patriotism.
Well, but in a way, what Obama is describing is social democracy, which works in other countries in as much as people vote and they don't have long election periods and they don't spend billions of dollars, and they vote for candidates by and large who are good stewards of their tax money and return that tax money in the form of government services. We have gone further and further away from that model where the government does less and less for the taxpayer and more for the special interests that dominate, if not own, our government.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. And not only is it true, there is an opposite view of what democracy is and an opposite view of what government is about. Obama also, in 2008, pointed out that democracy is based on a family model, what I've called a nurture and parent family, in which, as he said back then, parents empathize with their children, they are responsible for them, and they raise them to empathize with other people and be responsible for themselves as well as others, and that this is how government should function as well. But there's an opposite view, and the opposite view is from what I've called a strict father family. In a strict father family, the father is in charge, the boss, and the father is assumed to know right from wrong, and that children are born bad, they just do what feels good. You've heard the term feel-good liberals, who presumably don't know morality, And the job of the father is to train them to be moral beings by punishing them when they don't do what he says, which is presumably moral. And as a result, there is a logic to this, which is that the strict father says, hey, you know, you're going to be, if you're going to be moral, you've got to be disciplined to do what I say and do the right thing. And if you get that discipline, you can go out in the world and make a living. That means if you're not making a living, then you're not disciplined enough. That means you're not moral and you deserve your poverty. And that's a logic you see all over the place. In addition to that, in a strict father family, the one thing that this father cannot tolerate is losing authority. There can be no authority in the family above that strict father. And that gets projected onto our politics as well, onto conservative politics. So, for example, in the market, the assumption is that the market is an institution that's like a strict father. There should be no authority above it, no government, that will tax, no government that will have restrictions and regulations, no government that will guarantee worker rights, no government that will allow tort cases. That's what conservatives see about the market, which is supposedly justly rewards discipline, fiscal discipline, and punishes the lack of it. And that's true for conservative institutions generally. Conservatives project this onto religion, where there's a strict father God, onto classrooms where you teach to the test and people who fail just fail, too bad, and where, there are clear yes and no answers. They project this onto all institutions, including the government itself. And there's another very important thing. The highest value, just as in the strict father family, is the authority of the father itself. In conservatism, the highest value is the authority of conservatism itself. That is, strict conservatives want to guarantee that conservatism itself is defended and extended, and that's the major consideration. So, for example, if Obama proposes something that a conservative has proposed, they'll vote against it, not because it has to do with the particulars, but because it could help Obama and hurt conservatism. And that you see all over the place. You see it in John Roberts' conduct of the Supreme Court, and you see it constantly. One of the things that is most destructive in this is that conservatives understand this picture better than do most progressives. And that's one of the saddest things that we find. Conservatives have set up a system of communication that is not just, Fox News. That's the tip of the iceberg. That only has a couple of million viewers. They have a system of communication that extends throughout the country in every city, on not only on talk radio, but in people who are trained in leadership institutes to think and talk conservatives and get out there and talk on these things, and who, are on networks where they get talking points. This is important because language evokes ideas. It evokes frames. And those frames are part of a moral system. Any conservative language is evoking conservative frames. Now, you can see this in all kinds of cases. So, for example, the New York Times, a couple of days ago, on July 2nd, had a front page story on the fact that it is not old people who are using up all the money in the hospitals and so on for health care. Rather, it's babies being born. That is, the hospitals are charging more and more for pregnancies and charging perhaps 10 times as much as they used to for every little thing that goes on in a pregnancy. And that is one of the major, quote-unquote, costs to health care. But it is reported as a cost rather than an overcharging. And that's important, that the media is not generally talking about the responsibility of private corporations for what's going wrong in our society. This occurs also in cases like so-called right-to-work states, where there are laws that say you shouldn't have unions, where people should have the right to work and not pay into a union, they actually, are talking about corporate domination states, cases where, they are low-wage states. The idea there is for corporations to keep unions from guaranteeing reasonable wages and benefits. In short, the public discourse around this is ignoring the causes of our problems and instead, faulting the victims.
Again, I'm speaking with George Lakoff, who's Professor of Cognitive Science and Linguistics at the University of California in Berkeley. He's the author of Don't Think of an Elephant, and his latest book is The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-written with Elizabeth Vailing. And you mentioned George Lakoff in terms of the strict father, conservative figure, how that has also affected religion in this country. And the great intellectual father of the American Revolution, Tom Paine, once said that belief in a cruel God makes a cruel man. So why is it then that when you have conservatives like in the judiciary talking about original intent, meaning you've got to follow the literal letter of the Constitution, why don't we have original intent in terms of the Bible? Because that is certainly not the spirit of the Bible or the lessons of the prophet Jesus. His message was all about love and compassion, not being some overbearing, authoritarian, cruel scold, akin to the Witches of Salem era. I mean, that's totally been turned on its head. And also, it would seem that one of the problems that we have in our politics here is that it's okay and for conservatives to say, I'm a proud conservative. Romney said he was a severe conservative. How many liberals have you heard stand up and say, I'm a proud liberal?
Well, there are two issues here. Let's first talk about liberals and then about religion. On the liberal side, liberals have been getting it in the neck for a long time, from both sides. From the left, there's an issue of the Cold War liberals left over from the Vietnam War and neoliberalism attacked from the left. On the right, liberals have been attacked since 1967 and the Nixon era, when people wanted, had originally, as in 64, to be liberals after voting against Goldwater overwhelmingly. Then, in 1967, something important happened, which was that Nixon's operatives decided that they had to get working people to vote for Nixon. And they noticed three things had changed in 64. First, there was the student uprisings against the Vietnam War, and many working people had been in the military. And so Nixon called the students communists and ran an anti-communist campaign. Also, there was a women's movement, which became very prominent in those years. And many working men were strict fathers at home. And so Nixon ran on traditional family values. And then in 1965, there was the Civil Rights Act. And therefore, you had lots of working men, especially in the South, who were racists. And Nixon ran on against school busing, for example. These were important things, but they also concocted a new idea, the idea of the liberal elite, the idea that liberals were smarty-pants people who looked down on real working people and, didn't like working people and so on. And they've been saying this over and over, and it's been going on since 67. And the liberals never responded to it, never really said anything about what happened. They just let it go until it became the Tea Party. I mean, this is something where liberals just haven't had any understanding of how communication works. So that's the first part. On the religion part, it's very important to understand that if you have a strong worldview, it is physically there in your brain. It's in your brain circuits. and you can only understand what your brain circuits allow you to understand. You will not see or understand any facts that don't fit them. And so, as a result, people will read the Bible and pick out what makes sense to them. So if you talk to people who are very conservative Christians, many of them will say, Jesus was a warrior. You know, exactly the opposite of what progressive Christians will say. So you have very different views of God because you have very different views of morality. What's interesting about this is that many people have both, that many people have strict father views on some things and nurturing parent views on others. That is, they can be partly conservative and partly progressive, but on different issues, usually. Not usually on the same issue, but on different issues, and they can switch back and forth without even noticing. So the question is, how can you do that in a given brain? And the brain has a simple mechanism for it that it uses all over the place for all sorts of things. It's called mutual inhibition. That is, one circuit inhibits the other circuit inhibits the first, and whichever is on strongest inhibits the other. So what conservatives have learned is that they can use conservative language to activate their conservative frames and their conservative moral systems, thereby weakening the liberal ones. And this is what's going on in public discourse right now in the media. One of the problems is that most progressives, when they went to college, learned a false theory of how we think. That is, they learned what is called enlightenment reason. That is, if you just tell people the facts, they'll reason to the right conclusion. We all have the same notion of reason. It's all conscious. It's all logical, and so on. And that's just not true. That's what's taught in political science departments, in law school. It's taught in economics departments, in public policy departments. But if you go to business school, you take marketing, they don't teach that at all. In marketing courses, you learn that people think in terms of images, metaphors, frames, and emotions. And many Republicans, and particularly those sort of running the Republican framing accounts and the Republican communication systems, understand this fully and use it fully. And Democrats tend not to understand that at all and to make huge mistakes. And then they blame the Republicans. The Republicans are being smart. They have a moral system, and they've been able to get it out there, and they've done it in a very clever way. And unfortunately, because our educational systems are not training progressives who come into that system appropriately, what we're doing is putting conservatives at a great advantage.
Well, just in closing then, George Lakoff, on this 4th of July, is there a possibility, though, of the more defensive political left that, as you point out, doesn't frame things very well and has yet to have a full-throated defense of the very ideals that they purport to hold? I don't see this continuing forever because the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer and the poor are getting more numerous, and one would think at some point or other people would wake up and demand some social and political justice.
This isn't about, quote, waking up. Many of the poor people are conservatives. They have strict father values. Conservative populism is real. It was constructed and is kept in place via conservative language in public places. And it's also kept in place by unemployment and by the kinds of jobs that are out there in corporations. And they're kept in place by the lack of unions, for example. You have to look at institutions and the kind of moral view that runs institutions, and that's behind them. That has been incorporated into our culture, and it's terrible. It's not just simply people will suddenly wake up. You know, people, a lot of them know perfectly well that things are bad, but they attribute them to the wrong causes.
Well, I'm going to go out and have another hot dog and drink some more beer because I'm a little depressed, George, but I don't disagree with the thing you've said, I must say.
There's another part of this. One thing is that we do not have progressive celebrations of the 4th of July.
Well, let's begin.
Yes, very seriously. I mean, what would be a progressive celebration of the 4th of July? You know, yes, you should celebrate empathy and caring, not victory over something or other. You know, not power, but caring. You know, parades of soldiers, and stuff like that, but, parades of institutions of people who care.
Nurses, parades, doctors. Yeah, no, I think that's a wonderful idea. A wonderful idea. Well, thank you so much for joining us, George Lakoff.
Always a pleasure, Ian. Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with George Lakoff. He's professor of cognitive science and linguistics at the University of California, Berkeley. He's the author of Don't Think of an Elephant, and his latest book is The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-written by Elizabeth Failing.
We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a government whistleblower about what the Founding Fathers meant by patriotism.